This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Good evening. This is Stan Yanchus sitting in for Steve Shoemaker, who is on his way to Philadelphia to see his grandchildren. Our guest tonight is Reverend John Sutherland, pastor of St. Andrew's Lutheran Church and director of the Lutheran Campus Center at the University of Illinois in Champaign, Urbana. Welcome to Keeping the Faith, John.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Our topic tonight is the Christian minority in the divided Holy Land. But, John, would you first take a few minutes and tell our listeners something about yourself and your work?
Well, I've been serving at the Lutheran Campus Center, which is the home of St. Andrew's Congregation, for 15 years now. About 8 years ago, I took a mini sabbatical. I spent part of the summer on a study program in Jerusalem. And that was my first trip to the Holy Land. And it was the introduction to many, many things there. The historic and sacred sites, of course, were a big part. The study took place with a group of people who was looking at the ancient Israelite prophets, the prophets of the Hebrew Scriptures, and we related that to the sights and sounds of the land as we moved about on field trips. And we, of course, covered, being a Christian group, covered many of the sites that are related to the story of Jesus as well. Since then, I have been back there on my own several times, I believe four more times, last time of which was in January of this year.
Well, it's, let's see, I think before the show you mentioned you had taken five trips altogether to the Holy
Land?
Yes. And what's changed over that period of time? What have you noticed in general that's not quite the same?
Well, since my first trip, which was in 1998, that was before the uprising that is sometimes called the Second Intifada, and it seemed like the various ethnic communities there were living a relatively harmonious life. Unfortunately, politics and religion and economics all got locked horns in many ways, and I believe it was in the year 2000 that there was a major series of violent acts of one group of people, the Muslims, against the other group of people, mainly the Israelis, and it has led to more and more confrontation and oppression.
It's difficult to separate politics and religion, certainly when talking about the Holy Land, but I think some of our listeners may not just be aware of what life is like for the Christians living in the Holy Land. Could you tell us a little bit about the Christian minority and why I use the term, perhaps, Christian minority?
Well, as important as it is to the Christian tradition, the Holy Land, which consists, by the way, of, it's hard to know how to even speak of it in geographical terms. It's the land that was Palestine and part of Transjordan under after the Second World War, and it is what constitutes the nation of Israel and the Palestinian territories, and actually part of the state of Jordan as well, are all biblical sites that we sort of group together under the term the Holy Land. And as important as all of that is to us Christians, the Christian population of that area is very, very low. It's probably, I think it's around 2% of the population. The long-standing Arab-speaking population is the majority. And then, of course, in Israel, the Hebrew-speaking, largely Jewish population is very prominent and is in leadership positions. But in all cases, the Christians are a very, very small minority. And unfortunately, for many reasons, that percentage seems to be shrinking.
Well, I know when we watch the news, we certainly see the hostility, the violence involved, a lot of the military, the political actions taking place. But what is daily life like for the Christians living in the Holy Land? And again, I thank you for kind of describing the Holy Land in a little more depth. I think many people associate the Holy Land with purely being Jerusalem. So you've kind of expanded that out a little bit for us. But what is daily life for Christians living in the area like?
Well, most of the Christians live in the Palestinian territories. The Christians I'm familiar with live in what we call the West Bank. And so they are, many of them are outside of Jerusalem and outside of the official borders of the state of Israel. And since the Palestinian territories, the West Bank, for instance, is not a state, their life is quite ambiguous because it's hard to tell what their nationality is. And almost the only way we can identify them is by the language they speak or by the religion that they practice. I can say they're not free to travel. I have some good friends who live in some West Bank towns just a few miles from Jerusalem, but they are not free to get the proper visas to travel, say, to Jerusalem. I know one mother was bemoaning the fact that her little children really, really were pestering her to take them to the zoo. She can't go to the zoo. So there's travel is limited for many reasons, one of which certainly is security. Also, the unemployment rate is extremely high. That's probably the most severe symptom of the division between these people, about the most severe symptom that I'm aware of, that's obvious. And so the economy is very, very bad. Poverty is high because people cannot get to work. Many of the people who work in the city of Jerusalem, for instance, and Jerusalem is the metropolitan area, so that is the center of action, really. Many of the people who work there are Arabs, and many of them have a home in the Palestinian territories. So for them, I know some for whom getting to work each day is a major effort. There are checkpoints to go through. Sometimes these are closed. Sometimes they travel legally. Sometimes they travel illegally, simply so that they can get to their jobs. And like in our own nation, many of these people are doing probably low-paying labors that other people don't want to do.
You seem your answer seems to suggest that, I mean, the Christians in the Holy Land may have a closer affinity with the Palestinians than they may with the Israelis. Do you think that is true?
Oh, yes. The Christians are almost entirely Palestinians. There are religious communities, monasteries, for instance, from other countries. And there are, you know, the Holy Land sites, the religious shrines and so forth, maybe staffed from people. But as far as indigenous Christians, they're virtually all Arabs.
What is the presence of any particular Christian churches? Do we, in terms of the Roman Catholic Church or any particular denomination, you're Lutheran, for example?
Mm-hmm. Well, the dominant Christian community in the Holy Land, and this is true in Israel proper and in the outlying areas too, it would be the Greek Orthodox. They're the big ones. And then some other large groups are the Armenians, a group that's not well known in America, but the Armenian Orthodox Church. There are the Syrian and the Coptic churches. Of course, the Roman Catholic Church is one of the larger. The Protestant churches, by which I would mean, well, some that come to my mind are the Anglican Church, the Lutheran Church, and the Presbyterian Church, are very small.
Are there any type of ecumenical efforts that go on among the various Christian denominations to come together and speak with a unified voice about conditions or religious matters?
I think that, from what I hear, that they get along rather well with each other. Because they are basically all minority groups and under a great deal of stress, it's obvious to most of them that they need to band together and to cooperate. One instance I can think of is, and this is in Amman, Jordan, which I would include, broadly speaking, in the Holy Land, although it isn't often thought of that. But we have a Lutheran church there, and the pastor was telling me that they and the Greek Orthodox churches in the city had agreed on celebrating Easter on the same day. So they have, I think in that case, I could be wrong, but I think in that case, the Western Christians, the Lutherans in this case, had adopted the Eastern calendar.
Well, that seems to be a pretty significant action.
Well, it's a symbolic gesture that shows how important it is to them that they speak with and appear to be unified in the face of such an overwhelmingly large Muslim society.
One of Steve's upcoming shows here is going to be on evangelical social action. Do you see much political voice, given that the Christian minority is such a small group in the Holy Land? Do they unify or unite with any one group or another? Or do they try to put out some concerns that they have as an individual group?
I don't think they have a very strong political voice. When I was there in January, they were just gearing up for the elections. Everywhere I looked, I'm speaking of in the West Bank, there were candidates' posters on all the buildings and fences and so forth. I was not able to understand the wide diversity of political parties over there. And I don't know if, in fact, the Christians speak with a unified voice. I have the feeling that they are slightly to the left of the center of the political spectrum. And I also, at least from my own friends, got a report by email after the election saying, this outcome is not good for us.
Well, on that note, let's see if we can kind of broaden our discussion by inviting some of our listeners in. You are listening to the Reverend John Sutherland, pastor of St. Andrew's Lutheran Church and director of the Lutheran Campus Center at the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana, on Keeping the Faith on WILL AM 580. And I'm Stan Yanchus, sitting in for Steve Shoemaker. And since I seem to be losing the battle with this cold here, we certainly would enjoy taking your calls and give you the opportunity to discuss the Christian minority in the divided Holy Land with Reverend John Sutherland. Our local number is 333-9455. And outside of the area, you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-222-9455. Again, that was locally at 333-9455 and toll-free at 1-800-222-9455. John, do you think that there's any negative reaction toward Christians in the Holy Lands from the Palestinians or from the Islam community because of some of the recent provocative statements made by some of the evangelical Christian ministers in the United States? I mean, do Christians in the Holy Land face any sort of reaction that we might look?
Yes, they definitely do. They take great offense. And I'm speaking of the indigenous Christians in the West Bank, take great offense at the outside Christian groups who are trying to dictate the way things should go in the Holy Land when they have not been there and really don't know the people over there at all. As my pastor friend said, they come here and they act like we don't exist.
John, we do have a caller. You're on Keeping the Faith with Reverend John Sutherland. Go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry, we lost them. Well, it seems that there certainly is an ongoing relationship between politics and religion, both here in the United States and in the Holy Land. How accurate a portrayal do you think the media gives us in general of what's going on in the Holy Land, not only for the Christian minority, but just at large?
I don't think that we have a very clear understanding of what's going on. I certainly didn't before I went there. I really didn't understand the issues between Israel and Israel's neighbors at all. And to know what the tensions were, what the issues were at stake. I might add, too, that part of you asked a minute ago about the tension between Palestinian Christians and Palestinian Muslims. And there is a considerable tension because the Christians are committed to nonviolent response to the situation. And so in a sense, it is possible for them, at least to some of the of their neighbors, of their Palestinian neighbors, to look like they either they don't care or they're traitors to the cause because they're not willing to take up arms.
Okay. I think we do have a caller back. Go ahead. You're on the air with, Reverend John Sutherland. I'm sorry, we lost that one again. John, I don't know. People are getting a little bit of stage fright here. Just go ahead. And again, we're looking for your calls at 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. John, maybe we might take a little bit of a look about pilgrimages to the Holy Land. I know that I mentioned to you as we were talking before the show that I've discussed with my family and friends about taking a pilgrimage to the Holy Land. And to be honest, there's a certain reservation on the part of my wife and some other family members about all of the tension in the media, as you mentioned, seems to kind of fuel that. How do you feel about that? What would you say to friends who were considering taking a pilgrimage or a trip to the Holy Land?
I would say wholeheartedly do it. I have encouraged people along the way. When I have planned my trips, the people I know say their first reaction is, but is it safe? And I'd say, yes, it is.
Okay, I think we have our caller back.
Hello?
Go ahead. Yes, go ahead. You're on the air with John Sutherland.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. You said that many of the Christians were Arab. And my question is, I know in a lot of Muslim families, the marriages are arranged. Do the Arab Christians do that?
I believe they do, yes. To a certain degree, at least, there is an arranged marriage system.
I see. Well, that was my question.
Yeah, it's always sort of a surprise to us from the West to see that that is going on, but it is, and I think that it works fairly well for them. Thank you for the question.
Are there any other differences between what we might see in Christian religion, the Christian religion here in the United States and in the Holy Land?
The language is a big difference. This is a language in which to the Christians in the Holy Land, God is known as Allah, which is the Arab name for God.
Right.
And that strikes us somewhat oddly at times because it jars us out of our normal context. I think their social patterns are significantly different. I think that their sense of extended family, as you might well guess, is much stronger than ours is. Interdependence of neighbors with each other. And I must say, since the last person who called in asked about marriage, it's not at all uncommon for them to marry their cousins.
Ah, well, we have another caller. Go ahead. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Great. Hi, Reverend Sutherland. It's a great pleasure to listen to your conversation today.
Thank you.
I'm just curious. I don't mean to set back the conversation at all, but you said that it is often difficult to sort through the difficulties of the situation in the Holy Land. And I was wondering if, for those of us who are not as advanced on the subject, if you could just put the various conflicts as you see them in that region of the world into a nutshell. I don't mean to, as I said, set back the conversation at all, but I think it might be helpful to sort of lay the context, especially for those of us interested just not only in the Christians in the Holy Land, but everybody there. And I look forward to your answer. I'll hang up. Thank you very much.
Well, we have to look at the entire population. As I mentioned, the Christian presence there is so small that it wouldn't be representative of the land at all. I would say I don't feel that the tensions and the conflicts that of which we hear in the Holy Land They are not theological or religious conflicts. Despite the fact that our religions are different, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, not to mention the Druze and the Baha'i and the Samaritans, for some small groups in that area, the issues are not really religious issues in that sense of the word, as far as being theological debates. I think it is the basic battle is like it is in most places, control of the land and the economy. And people are doing what they need to do to survive economically and to gain dominance over of power over the area. And each group would prefer to have their own group be in power.
Given the fact that we're using the term Holy Land to describe this broad area because of the shared history and shared sacredness of some of both the location itself and some of the relics, the land. How does, if we take a specific place, whether it be the Wailing Wall or any other place you might want to think, how does that happen if we were to go there? Will we see Muslims, Christians, and Jews at the same location at the same time worshiping?
No, you wouldn't. They all are well-defined in where each group belongs. And the places you mentioned, of course, are in Jerusalem.
Right.
And I'm trying to think if there are any places that are open to all the religious people, and I really can't think of any right off the top of my head. I think the thing that I advise people if they're making their first trip to the Holy Land is brace yourself for how unholy it is.
Oh.
It's very, and I'm not saying in the sense of evil or corrupt, but I am saying in the sense of being down to earth, rough and tumble, not heavenly at all. It's very earthy, and it is very steeped in the struggles and the pains and the twists and turns of history.
Well, as you're speaking now, I can see that just the vision of what you described is unsettling to you. And you mentioned before the show that when you spoke to Steve, your appearance here this evening came about when you mentioned your distress about some of the conditions of the Holy Land. What does distress you? What you just described obviously is distressing, but do you have any hope that I don't want to get into a broad political discussion necessarily, but do you have any hope that spiritually or that there may be a possibility for a little more harmony, a possibility to overcome the political conditions?
Yes, I do. And like many of our hopes, it is founded on things that we cannot see. It borders on wishful thinking at times. But a very wise friend of mine who is a Christian Palestinian who travels across through the checkpoints and across the border every day to work pointed out, he said, they need us and we need them. And I think that that both sides of the, or all the sides of these issues are interdependent on each other, and I don't think there will ever be a healthy nation there until we find ways that they can coexist and that they can support each other.
Do you think there's anything that churches here in the United States can do? Christian, Muslim, and Jewish synagogues to promote more dialogue, at least with their counterparts in the Holy Land. I know that some churches have sister churches or have relationships set up to support each other.
As far as the Christian community goes, I think that's very important. They're very dependent upon outside support. As I mentioned a minute ago, the internal economy is abysmally low, and they are struggling just to keep their heads above water and to keep food on the table for their children. And they need to have financial support, and they also need moral support. They need Christians to come and see them.
Sounds like this, again, I know that there are numerous projects of this nature in place, but it certainly sounds like this would be a good place for both social action and for evangelical action groups from various Christian churches. Again, you are listening to the Reverend John Sutherland, pastor of St. Andrew's Lutheran Church and director of the Lutheran Campus Center at the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana. And we would love to take your calls, any questions you might have for Reverend Sutherland. He's taken numerous trips to the Holy Land. He has shared with us. And our number here is 333-9455. And outside of the area, you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-222-9455. Again, that was 333-9455 locally and toll-free at 1-800-222-9455. John, keeping with perhaps the spirit of hope that we just raised here a minute ago and some possible positive actions that people might take to create more dialogue and perhaps better conditions for not only the Christians but everyone in the Holy Land, what's been the most inspirational event that you've witnessed in your travels to the Holy Land?
I think that the hospitality and the hopefulness of the people, and I'm referring to a Lutheran congregation with whom I worshiped one Sunday. I went out to their village early Sunday morning, even though I had heard it was within hearing distance of downtown Jerusalem, and I heard what sounded like firecrackers, and I asked somebody, and no, there was gunfire going on in the village there where I was supposed to go the next day. I went anyway. I thought that if there's any danger, the cab drivers will know that, and they will say, you don't go. The buses wouldn't be running. And I went to the church. The pastor was apologetic to me because many of the families wouldn't be in church that morning because their children couldn't sleep the night before because of all the gunfire going on. So he apologized for them for that. And here he asked me to speak to this congregation, by translation, of course, and I didn't know what to say. They had suffered so much, and yet they were opening their doors to me and treating me as an honored guest who was coming from the outside, a person with every advantage, and they were having me as their guest in the church and later at dinner in one of their homes that day. And after church, they took me out around town in one of their few cars and showed me all the places that were damaged by the shell fire the night before.
We do have another caller. You're on the air with John Sutherland.
Hi. I have a question about, you said there was a large Arab population that works in Jerusalem, and I wondered how the day-to-day relationship is. I know there are a lot of migrant workers in this country. And is there hostility between these two groups, or do they coexist daily and then go back to work or back home in the evening?
Yes, I think they get along rather well. If you visit, for instance, in Jerusalem, the Old City, which is where tourists and pilgrims normally go, most of the shops there are run by Arabs. Some of them are residents of Israel, and some come, as you noted, from the outlying territories. They get along well. They're very shrewd and they're very kind at the same time. Probably the reason that it remains fairly peaceful is because in three-quarters of the Old City, it's almost entirely Arab-speaking people. And the Jewish quarter of the Old City has its own shops, and people don't go back and forth all that quickly between those sections. But they do get along fine. You can walk up and down the streets of Jerusalem and everybody's friendly, just like, well, everybody is decent, like in any city, and they know what they're doing, and they know how to get along, and they've learned to, if there are problems, they know how to avoid them. So it's most encouraging, and you don't really, until you start looking beneath the surface, you don't even sense that there is a great disparity between these groups.
Well, John, from your response there, it seems And I know some of our listeners may scoff a little bit when you say, you know, normal as in any city. I know that in some of our American cities, there certainly we have our concerns as well. But it sounds as though daily life is not just checkpoints and extreme political conditions, but an interaction of people who are from all three of the major religions. Is there any sense that you have that the people are tired? Is there? I know there have been, and we're all, the most of us, familiar with the recent Palestinian elections with the Hamas government coming in, a government that, you know, some would consider, if not many, consider extreme because of their position toward Israel. And certainly we've seen a wide range of political activity in Israel reflecting the situation in the Holy Land. But is there any sense that you've had in your most recent visit, especially, that people in general would like to see some direction, that the people are willing to make some concessions, the people are willing to be more tolerant?
Very much so. I think in all sides of these issues, there is, I'm hoping, a majority of the people who want to live a peaceful life, who want to get along with their neighbors, with all their neighbors, who are not trying to grasp for either political or territorial power, and who simply want to have a job and send their kids to school and worship God in their own way and live in a peaceful world. And there are organizations there are interfaith and international organizations over there, interracial and so forth, that are working hard at this. And many of the Christian groups, because of the Christians being a minority, no one can accuse them of having a vested interest in power, because they just don't. And many of them, and I know some of them personally, are hosting workshops and promoting seminars and so forth to bring precisely these various people together and to work for peaceful ways. Now, you mentioned the Hamas party. I don't think anyone expected that they would win. This was a surprise to everyone I've heard from, Muslims, Christians, the Israelis, and the American government was surprised.
We do have another caller here, John. Go ahead. Oh. You're on the air with John Sutherland.
Yes, I am. I went to hear Dr. Martin Akkad yesterday at the Arab Basic Theological Seminary, and it was a very interesting lecture where he distinguished between the importance of Christians and Arabs and getting together and talking. And you mentioned the phrase tolerant. I think that we all need to be tolerant and respectful of the faith. And I know you just came back from the Holy Land. I've been there also. It's very holy. It's one of the best ways I know to spend Lent. Anyway, can you speak to that issue, please? I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
I'm not quite clear, before you hang up, what exactly you're asking.
Yeah, what I'm asking is, what do you think the answer to the friction is? Since you've been there, I've been there.
Is that all?
Yes, that's it.
If you can answer this, John, I think you may be on an airplane to Washington and to a few other places very quickly.
I think it would help a great deal if the American public were better informed, would pay more attention to the various groups and the various concerns, and that we would have foreign policy from our own country here in America that would promote peace in the Middle East, not only by devising a roadmap for it, but also by justifying, and I don't know how to say this exactly because it's very complex, but of giving financial support where it is needed the most and where it could be a peaceful force for those people. And I say that because the United States already supplies a lot of money to people in Israel, Palestine, and so forth. And I think we can do better to we need to have our own vision of what peace would be, and we need to be able to share that vision and to discourage the violence and the extremes that we see on all sides.
Well, John, you've kind of walked into the waters of the where the bridge is between politics and religion, so maybe we might want to address it a little bit. I know in my own parish, and I'm sure in just about everyone else's place of worship, there's discomfort at times when you raise the role of action, whether it be political action or social action, and the appropriate involvement of a religious group, be it the war in Iraq, be it the conditions, the situation in the Middle East. What do you think that role should be, I guess, as a pastor? Can we sit back and allow all of this disruption, hatred and violence to occur without individually as churches and collectively as spiritual people taking a stand?
I think the Christian churches in the United States need to work on this together. And by, I would say, the Orthodox Church, the Catholic Church, and the Episcopal Church, and the Lutheran Church. Those are four that I know of that have some degree of influence there and have a presence there that I think is would inform a suitable action. I think we need to share that information with each other and not feel like we're competing on that stage, and influence directly as much as we can influence the Christian institutions there, which are basically pro-peace, nonviolent peace. And I think we also need to speak with a voice strong enough to influence, as I said, the foreign policy of the United States to do better. And I thought after I talked a minute ago, I was thinking, I don't think that we're successful, that the United States should go around dictating to other countries how they should operate. We have a habit of doing that in many ways, but I do think we have to be careful about what programs we fund.
Again, do you think that what you say seems to suggest, you know, a political action or a concentrated or conscious political action on the parts of Christians? And we've mentioned earlier and discussed a little bit about direct action in terms of sister churches and aid. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to put you on the spot to pull a tremendous amount of names or telephone numbers or anything off the top of your head, but are there any organizations, if individuals in their religious group would want to do something personally and you know, on a make an effort to try to help those Christians in the Holy Land and to promote that harmony and dialogue and perhaps to reach out and without going beyond having to address the broader United States political policies? Could they do that?
Well, I know that in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, of which I'm a part, there is an office, a national office, that is concerned about peace in the Holy Land. I certainly would assume that other Christian denominations have the same kind of thing. And so that would be one thing to do. Then there are institutions in the Holy Land to which one could donate directly. For instance, in the outskirts of Jerusalem, there is an Augusta Victoria Hospital. Is a church-run hospital. It's run and operated by the Lutheran World Federation. And I, for one, have made donations directly to them. And they are a hospital that serves principally Arab-speaking people.
Outside of Googling, is there any way that our listeners might be able to come up with an address or that can they give, perhaps not you personally, but give a call to the Lutheran Campus Center or any place they might contact?
I would be happy to find those numbers and things for people. As I say, I'm just one denomination among many.
Right.
I would suggest calling your own church first. I would encourage, of course, the entire world to contribute to the Lutheran Church if they really want to. But unfortunately, I'm going to be away for spring break this week. So
wait till next week.
Wait till next week.
Okay, again, we're on the air here with Reverend John Sutherland, pastor of St. Andrew's Lutheran Church and director of the Lutheran Campus Center at the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana. We're discussing the Christian minority in the divided Holy Land. John has taken quite a few trips to the Holy Land, and we're trying to get a little bit of an understanding for what life is like for the Christian minority and conditions in general in the Holy Land. We'd love to hear from you. Our local number is 333-9455, and outside of this area, you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-222-9455. Again, that was 333-9455, and toll-free at 1-800-222-9455. John, I think that you've perhaps put to rest, hopefully if not put to rest, at least posed some other sides to the issue of what people may consider in terms of making a pilgrimage to the Holy Land. But I was wondering if someone were considering and perhaps feeling a little bit more at ease. You've given us one tip about if the cab drivers won't go there, then perhaps it's not a good thing to do. If they will, perhaps we can feel somewhat comfortable. Now, some may not feel totally at ease in putting their condition or their safety in the hands of the cab driver. But what are some other tips or suggestions if someone is contemplating a trip to Old Tim that you would give?
Well, first of all, even though it's a major concern with most people, I think it's basically a safe place to go. No government has taken more security measures than Israel. And so it is... it's as insulated from danger to travelers as anything you can imagine. I would say recognize the fact that the United States is not always seen as the benevolent big brother in the world, but is sometimes a bully. And so I don't think you would want to wave an American flag when you're there. I think, remember that you are their guest, and I have said this to travelers in any country, much more benign situations than this. Just remember that you're their guest, and approach the whole thing with some degree of modesty and humility. Basically, these people love it to have American people come. Americans are appreciated as individuals, whether or not our government policies are appreciated as political sticks.
In that spirit of showing some sensitivity, what language or what sayings might an American taking a trip to the Holy Land might come up with? Is there anything linguistically one might do?
You can get by with English perfectly well. With only English, you can. It's nice if you can learn, hello and thank you, in Hebrew or or Arabic. It's a nice gesture, but basically speaking, remember that Great Britain ruled that land from 1918 to 1948, I believe. The English presence is extremely prominent there. Street signs are in English, and so forth. So. An English-speaking tourist virtually has no problem getting around.
You mentioned that, and I'm sure that was a surprise to some of our listeners, that to the Holy Land, the Christians in the Holy Land, that Allah is God. Mm-hmm. What is Jesus Christ? Hope I didn't put you on the spot there,
well,
but I was curious.
It's almost the same. I suppose it's Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ.
Something like that.
And...
I flunked Arabic, by the way, so I have yet
well,
to learn that.
Is Arabic considered a difficult language?
Yes.
Okay, and again, I show my own ignorance.
It's a lot like Hebrew. They're both Semitic languages, since Arabs and Jews are all Semitic people. But it's and it sounds a lot like Hebrew, but it looks so different. The written form of it, I have found, and I did try to learn it. The written form of it is so complex that I need to study harder.
So you wouldn't advise someone, perhaps, who's going to take a pilgrimage to the Holy Land to grab a Arabic or a Hebrew-English dictionary and...
I would say get a phrase book, because they will have them, the words printed in Roman Latin letters that we know how to pronounce. As I said, the Arabic letters are very difficult for most people to read. So learn some phrases just to show that you care. You don't need it in order to survive, but you do need it as a bit of respect for the people there.
You know, you've mentioned in respect, and I think that in tone with harmony and with, you know, a dialogue among all religions, if someone were to travel to the Holy Land and wish to attend religious service of Jews, of Muslims while they were there, how would that be viewed? Is that a possibility? Given some of the hostility toward America, I mean, are we going to be perceived as being curiosity seekers or someone who genuinely wants to share a worship service?
Well, for one thing, they're used to curiosity seekers. Since the 4th century, at least, Jerusalem has been a pilgrimage site, and they have done things. They have built the churches and other shrines as pilgrimage centers to attract tourists. So they expect you to come, and no one takes offense at it. The worship in these churches would not be in English. I think maybe there's a Scottish Presbyterian church. I think maybe that worship would be in English. And there are English-speaking churches in a few of the otherwise Arabic congregations. For instance, the Church of Our Redeemer in the Old City of Jerusalem has a Lutheran Arabic-speaking congregation. But they also host some expatriate congregations. There's an English-speaking that has an American pastor, and there is a German-speaking congregation that has a German pastor as well.
You mentioned that there is, you know, a variety. I asked you earlier a little bit about your most inspirational moment, and you mentioned the warmth you felt when you were a guest after some violence,
right,
and gunshot in the area. Spiritually, what has been some of your more moving moments in going to the Holy Land?
Well, after visiting there, I must say, I have gained a lot of information and appreciation for the faith of Islam. I suppose I grew up, like many Christians, thinking that this was some kind of foreign and adversarial religion. And there are things, certainly enough differences between Christianity and Islam that you could make a case for that. But then I suddenly realized we are worshiping the same God, and God loves all these people. So I have gained a new appreciation for the prayers and the faith of people of Islam.
And in your work with students, how do you feel that your travels to the Holy Land and the appreciation that you just mentioned affects your work? And what do you see and hear and feel in the minds and the hearts of the young people with your work with and who you're working with in regard to the Holy Land and religious tolerance?
I think that people, the young people that I work with, the students population, well, and the older people that are part of our community as well, are very interested to hear from someone who has been there and to hear that there is, you know, some hope and to have some kind of a theological basis of how the faith of Christianity can be reinforced by the faith of Islam and the faith of Judaism, can undergird and strengthen how we can do that to each other. So I think just the spirit of tolerance, and not just tolerance, but actual mutual understanding is extremely important. A few years ago, many of us religious leaders were trying our hardest to organize an interfaith student trip to the Holy Land. But we could not get it off the ground, and I think fear of violence was one of the main things.
Is there any chance that you might bring that back?
We all think it's a great idea, but I don't know of any of us that think that the response would be any better now than it was 3 years ago.
So overcoming the fear of the violence in the political climate is difficult.
And for Jewish and Muslim and Christian students to travel together in itself is a risk. Because we all have to ask the questions, you know, how much can we give, as well as how can we observe our faith and yet observe the faith of one another as well on this group?
Well, I think it's certainly a wonderful goal worth pursuing. I recently had the opportunity in my work as a teacher and a speech coach to attend their state speech tournament, and one of our students who qualified was a Hindu with an Indian cultural background, and she was able to take a friend with her so she wouldn't have to spend all time alone in the hotel room when she wasn't competing. And the friend she chose was a Muslim with a Pakistani cultural background.
My goodness.
And that was just absolutely enriching. So I think anything that we can do to bring people together is wonderful personally. And I think your observations and what you've shared with us certainly indicates that by working together with our own denominations, whatever they may be, our own religions, whatever they may be, or as individuals, frankly, who would like to see a more harmonious, tolerant world, that we can make a difference. We have a few minutes left, and again, we've been talking to Reverend John Sutherland of St. Andrew's Lutheran Church and director of the Lutheran Campus Center at the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana. This is Stan Yanchus, and I am holding up here fairly well with the cold. We'd love to hear from you if you have questions or comments. Our number here locally is 333-9455 and toll-free at 1-800-222-9455. Again, that was 333-9455 locally and 1-800-222-9455. And we do have a caller. You're on the air with John Sutherland. I thought we had a caller, but I guess we don't. I beg the listeners' patience here. Up, oh, got it. Okay, we're going to need to wrap that up. This has been Stan Yanchus sitting in for Steve Shoemaker on the caller. Okay, just 1 second. You're on the air.
Yeah, good afternoon. I would like to thank you for this program because I think that the fact that there are Palestinian Christians is just not well known at all. And the image of the Palestinians as Muslim extremists and the Palestinian Christians, as my understanding, suffered every bit as much as the Muslims when the Jewish takeover of the state took place. I've read two books recently. One is by Ilya Shakur, who wrote the book Blood Brothers, and he was in a traditional, I think, Orthodox family and became a priest when his village was taken over by the Jews. And they were willing to be peaceful, but they were very violently routed, and their village was destroyed. And then also, I'm glad I look like a terrorist, which is written by an American Palestinian Christian, and about his experience of being Palestinian in America. So I'm glad you've broadened the perspective.
I might add to your list, I just picked up a brand new book published this year called Christians and a Land Called Holy by Charles Lutz and Robert Smith. It's published by Fortress Press that gives a good historical background, a cultural analysis, and offers some real hope, I think. So I would encourage, if you want to pursue that, to look in that book.
John, would you want to share a little bit with us some of the information or some of the points that the book you just mentioned is? And you might share that title with us one more time, so if our listeners want to jot it down, they can do so.
Yes, Christians and a Land Called Holy. The subtitle is How We Can Foster Justice, Peace, and Hope. And it's by Charles Lutz, L-U-T-Z, and Robert O. Smith. This is written, these are two Lutheran pastors and who have traveled there recently and who have worked with the Lutheran community, and I don't mean that in any sectarian sense, but simply an example of the kinds of Christians that are living there and some of the struggles and some of the historical background, as well as, I said, so the call to action is the fourth of four chapters, and it offers some real positive things that people can do. Paying attention, visiting, working with interfaith groups, and prayer is emphasized as one possibility, something that all Christians and all people of faith, in fact, can do.
Thank you. And again, I think you're providing us with a great deal of hope, quite frankly, and some very positive actions that we might take before we run to the end of the show. Is there anything you would like to add, or any comments you'd like to make that you haven't had the opportunity to do so?
I would say that people need to find avenues. Some of these books that our caller mentioned, and the book that I added to her list, I think could be most informative. There are several others. I didn't bring a bibliography with me, but I think a trip to the library or looking in one of these books, they probably have cross-references that you can check out for many other things. And talking with, I think, people in your own faith tradition. If you have, if your church has a national headquarters, I think somebody there would be related to international affairs and so forth, and would be both a source of information and possibly a conduit of influence that you could make.
Well, John, I want to thank you for being on Keeping the Faith and for sharing some wonderful ideas about what. Given us information about the situation in the Holy Land, especially for the Christian minority, and some advice on what each of us might do individually, what we might do as Christian communities, and to create a atmosphere of tolerance and harmony and opening up dialogues in the world. I think that given, as we've noted, often the media portrayal of the situation in the Holy Land, it's difficult for us sometimes to see a positive side. And I think you've done a wonderful job of creating some hope. Some upcoming shows on Keeping the Faith will be Crop Walks on March 26, a discussion of the Jewish Passover on April 2nd, Evangelical Social Action on April 9th, and on Easter Sunday, April 16th, there will be Poems for the Spirit. This has been Stan Yanchis sitting in for Steve Shoemaker, and you've been listening to Keeping the Faith on WILL AM 580. Thank you very much, callers, for all of your calls, and we really appreciated everything that you had to say today, and we hope that anyone who might be considering taking a trip to the Holy Land will find John's tips very useful.